Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Great to be here.
We're taking a really fascinating journey today, looking at how animals and robots, too, actually manage to move through some really tricky, uneven landscapes.
Yeah, and how they switch gears, you know? How they change the way they're moving when they hit an obstacle.
Exactly. We've got some great research, mostly from a 2021 publication in the Proceedings of the Royal Society B.
Right.
And our goal, really, is just to pull out the key insights for you.
Think about it. Like, how does something, could be a cockroach, could be a small robot, go from just, you know, walking along to suddenly having to climb over a big rock or squeeze through a narrow gap? It's those transitions that are fascinating.
Right. So we're not so much focused on the steady stuff, like you said, cruising on a flat surface.
No. This is all about those moments of change when the going gets tough, basically.
And a different strategy is suddenly needed for a bump or a hole or, you know, whatever the environment throws at them.
Mm-hmm. And what's really compelling, I think, is trying to uncover the sort of fundamental rules, the physics that governs these changes, even when the obstacles are, you know, surprisingly big compared to the animal or robot.
Okay, so let's unpack that. What I find really cool is that this sits right at that sweet spot, doesn't it? Biology, robotics, and basic physics.
Absolutely.
In fact, they've even coined a term for it, which I like. Terradynamics.
Terradynamics, yeah. It's all about the physical interactions during movement on land.
Okay. So we kind of have a decent handle on how a robot, or maybe a creature with legs, keeps up a steady movement, like a walk or a run.
Sure. Steady state locomotion, we understand that reasonably well.
But it's when they hit something unexpected, something complex, and have to change their whole approach.
That's where it gets fuzzy.
Yeah, that's where our understanding really kind of falls off.
Exactly. Compared to that continuous, predictable movement, figuring out these locomotor transitions in really complex 3D environments, well, it's been a huge challenge.
Why is that?
We just haven't really had the core theoretical ideas, you know, to really grasp how these shifts in movement are generated, how they're controlled purely through that physical interaction, not in the same way we understand, say, the mechanics of a running stride.
Right.
What's exciting here is how they've actually started to build that foundational understanding.
And this isn't just like an academic exercise, is it? Because even with all the cool robots we see.
Oh, definitely not.
Mobile robots still, well, they still run into problems, sometimes literally, especially when they face obstacles that are as big as they are.
Right, obstacles on their own scale. And that really limits where we can actually use them effectively.
Like monitoring wildlife in rough terrain. Forests, the paper mentions that.
Yeah, or search and rescue in, say, collapsed buildings. Think about rubble.
Or even exploring other planets, right, where the surface is totally unpredictable.
Exactly. So that's a really crucial point for why this research actually matters. If we want robots that can genuinely operate in these really tough, varied environments,
we need to figure this out.
We need to figure out how they handle these transitions. And by looking at animals, how they handle them too.
Okay, so this is where the researchers got pretty clever. Using these simplified model systems.
Mm-hmm. Think of it like how engineers use a wind tunnel for studying aerodynamics.
Right. You simplify the plane, simplify the airflow to get the basic principles.
Exactly. You strip away some of the real-world complexity, the clutter, to focus on what's really fundamental.
And one of the biological models they use is this discoid cockroach from rainforests.
Yeah, apparently it's a master navigator in really complex terrain, a good source of inspiration.
So, okay, they've got their inspiration. What kind of tools do they actually develop to, you know, get down to the details? How do these creatures and the robots they built manage these tricky transitions?
Well, first, they recognize that natural ground is just incredibly varied, right?
Totally. Rocks, roots, leaves, gaps.
So they took that complexity and essentially boiled it down. They created a set of simplified, manageable challenges in the lab. Things like compliant beams, so bendy obstacles, rigid pillars, gaps, obviously, bumps.
Okay.
And the really crucial part was being able to precisely control the properties of these obstacles.
Ah, so you can change just one thing at a time?
Exactly. Like how stiff the beams were, the exact shape of the pillar, the size of the gap. Mm. So they could run systematic controlled experiments and see exactly how changing the obstacle affected the movement.
That makes total sense. You can't do good science if everything's different every time.
Yeah.
But hang on, actually measuring how something moves in 3D across that stuff, That sounds incredibly difficult.
Oh, it is.
All the twisting and turning, and things must block the view all the time, probably.
Absolutely. You know, standard methods, maybe a couple of cameras, they just weren't cutting it, especially with these significant 3D rotations and, like you said, occlusions where things get blocked.
So what did they do?
They built this automated visible light imaging system, pretty sophisticated. It involved using up to 12 synchronized
Trial
cameras.
cameras.
12. High resolution, high speed. And to get really accurate tracking, they even put tiny QR code markers on the animals and the obstacles.
Wow, QR code. So you know exactly what you're looking at and where it is.
Precisely. And
Yeah.
it really paid off.
I bet. What kind of accuracy did they get?
It was impressive. This system let them capture almost continuous interaction with the terrain and track movement with the standard deviation of only 0.6 millimeters for position
Tiny.
and about 1.1 degrees for orientation. And that's within a pretty large measurement volume, too.
So they could really trust the subtle details they were seeing.
Exactly. That level of precision is key. And they also developed something else cool, a terrain treadmill.
A treadmill with obstacles.
Kind of. Yeah, it's a smart idea. It let them study these transitions continuously over longer distances, but still be able to zoom in on the fine details, like what the antenna or the legs were doing during the interaction.
That's clever. Okay, so that covers the observation side. What about the robots? They didn't just watch cockroaches, did they?
No, definitely not. They also built simplified robotic physical models. Basically, a robot version for each of those model terrain challenges we talked about, the beams, the gaps, etc.
And were these robots like super complex?
Actually, no. They were designed to be very basic. Minimal sensing, minimal control, simple movement, which counterintuitively makes the analysis and the modeling much easier.
Right, fewer variables to worry about.
Plus, with robots, you have complete control, right?
Yeah.
You can change specific parameters easily, test very precise hypotheses, and they often ran them in what's called open loop,
Meaning, yeah.
meaning the robot isn't using sensors to actively adjust its movement mid-course. It just sort of goes. This lets the researchers isolate just the effect of the passive mechanics, the pure physics of the interaction between the robot and the obstacle.
So these aren't the kind of super smart adaptive robots you might see in, I don't know, Boston Dynamics videos.
Not in terms of trying to achieve peak performance in every single situation. No, the paper's quite clear on this. These robots were tools. They were specifically built to generate the kinds of movement transitions the researchers wanted to study.
Ah, okay, so they're like physical models to test biological ideas and uncover general principles.
Exactly. Not necessarily designed to be the world's best obstacle course runners.
Got it. Okay, so they've got their experiments, animals, robots, precision tracking. How do they then start to make sense of all this data to figure out the underlying rules? The paper talks a lot about potential energy landscapes. That sounds physicsy.
It is, yeah. It's a concept borrowed from physics, actually, from how we understand things at a much smaller scale, like how protein molecules fold into their specific shapes.
Okay.
Imagine a hilly landscape. You've got valleys and you've got hills, right?
Right.
The valleys represent stable states. In our case, different stable ways of moving, like steady walking or climbing or maybe rolling over an obstacle.
Okay. The low points are stable modes.
And the hills, they're like energy barriers. You need to put in some energy, overcome that hill to switch from one stable way of moving one valley to another.
Ah, I see. So changing how you move those locomotor transitions.
Can be seen as barrier crossing transitions on this energy landscape. You have to get over a hump to change your mode.
Interesting analogy. So how do they actually create one of these landscapes for, say, a cockroach trying to get over a flexible beam?
Well, it's a multi-step process. First, you need a simplified physics model of how the animal or robot actually interacts with that obstacle.
Okay, boil down the interaction.
Then you figure out the potential energy of the system. This depends on key factors, relevant degrees of freedom, they call them. Things like how the body is rotated, its position, maybe the angle of its wings if it's trying to self-right.
Degrees of freedom, like the main ways it can move or change shape.
Exactly. You also need to carefully measure the physical properties. How stiff is the beam? How heavy is the robot? What's its shape? Then, crucially, you choose just a few key degrees of freedom to build your landscape.
Why only a few?
For simplicity, initially, trying to visualize a landscape with 10 dimensions is, well, impossible. So they might focus on, say, just body pitch and forward movement for climbing an obstacle, or body roll and wing opening angle for self-righting.
Makes sense. Keep it manageable.
Then they calculate the potential energy for all combinations of those chosen degrees of freedom and visualize it. That gives you the landscape, showing the stable valleys, the basins, and the hills or barriers between them.
So it's basically a map showing how much energy it costs for the animal or robot to be in different positions or orientations while it's dealing with the obstacle.
That's a great way to put it, yes. And what's really important methodologically is that these landscapes are derived from first principles. They come directly from the physics of the interaction.
Not just fitting curves to data or something.
Right. It's grounded in the physical interaction itself.
Okay. The paper then walks through these landscapes for different challenges, gaps, bumps, pillars, beams, even flipping over.
Mm.
Can you give us a flavor of what they found? What did these landscapes reveal for each case? Any surprises?
Definitely. Let's take a gap. The model showed something pretty cool. You get either a fall basin, basically, the state where you fall in, or a cross basin representing successfully getting over it. What was really insightful was seeing how sensitive the outcome was. Tiny changes in approach speed or the body's pitch and yaw angles could determine whether you ended up in the fall basin or the cross basin.
So small initial differences have big consequences.
Exactly. For a bump, they saw similar things. You get climb basins and deflect basins either going over or getting pushed aside. Again, the initial body angle, pitch and yaw, turned out to be surprisingly critical in dictating which basin the system fell into.
Hmm. And what about those rigid pillars? That sounds like a recipe for getting stuck.
Well, this is where body shape made a huge difference, something maybe not immediately obvious. They found that for blocky sort of cuboid shapes, there's an effect they called obstacle attraction.
Attraction.
Yeah, the body tends to pitch up against the pillar, leading it into a climb basin. But if the body was more rounded, more elliptical.
Like a streamlined shape?
Kinda, yeah. Then you get repulsion. The body tends to get pushed away from the pillar, leading it into a turn basin, which is often more effective for getting around it.
Wow, so just changing the body shape fundamentally alters the likely interaction.
Absolutely. It can sort of pre-program the outcome. And interestingly, they also found that active leg movements could actually help a blocky robot escape that climb basin and transition into the more useful turn basin.
So you can overcome the basic physics with active control.
Sometimes, yes. Now, for the flexible beams, they add that element of bending, compliance. Here, the landscape showed a pitch basin where the robot or animal ends up just pushing against the beams, maybe getting stuck. But it also showed roll basins where it actually rolls into the gap between the beams.
Oh, using the gap.
Exactly. And a key insight here was how the stiffness of those beams dramatically changed the landscape. Very stiff beams made that roll basin much harder to get into. The barrier was higher.
Makes sense. If they don't bend, you can't easily roll between them.
Precisely. And lastly, self-righting. Flipping over when you're upside down.
A classic robot problem.
And an animal one. The landscape here shows an obvious upside down basin, the stable stuck state. But it also reveals a potentially tricky, metastable basin, sort of a halfway point you could get stuck in, and then the desired pitch upright and roll upright basins.
Okay.
And a really neat finding here was that active strategies, like opening wings if you have them, could significantly lower the energy barrier to get into that roll upright basin. Made it much easier to flip over using a roll.
So actively changing your shape changes the landscape itself.
It can lower the hills, effectively, yeah.
Okay, so these potential energy landscapes are like powerful maps of the challenges, showing the different likely outcomes and the energy needed to switch between them. But the paper mentioned other modeling tools, too. Dynamic templates and simulations.
Yeah, that's right. While the potential energy landscapes give you this great static picture, the stable states, the barriers, they don't always tell you about the dynamics, the actual motion, the forces involved over time.
Ah, okay. They show the destinations, not the journey.
Sort of, yeah. So they also developed these simpler dynamic template models. Think really stripped down models with just a few key moving parts. They use these for things like crossing large gaps or self-righting.
And what do those tell you?
Because they're simpler, you can often write down and actually solve the equations of motion. This lets you predict things like impact forces, how fast things will move, and even test potential control strategies like how should I move my legs to cross this gap smoothly?
More predictive for the actual movement.
Exactly. And for self-righting, they also used more complex multi-body dynamic simulations. These are computer models that can account for more real-world messiness, like the fact that wing and leg movements aren't always perfectly coordinated. They can introduce some randomness.
Gotcha. So using a whole suite of modeling tools gives a more complete picture.
Precisely.
So bringing all this together, the experiments, the different models, what are some of the main takeaways, the general principles that seem to emerge across all these different scenarios?
Well, one thing that really stands out is that these different ways of moving the locomotor modes, like climbing, rolling, turning, they're often quite stereotypical, consistent, predictable in a way.
Okay.
But the transitions between them often appear somewhat stochastic, a bit random. You might not transition the exact same way every time.
Right, there's variability.
But, and this is key, what's not random is that the probability of using a certain mode or successfully transitioning to it is heavily influenced by specific parameters, both the locomotive parameters like speed, angle of approach, and the terrain parameters like obstacle height or stiffness.
And this potential energy landscape idea really provides a framework for understanding that apparent randomness, doesn't it?
It really does. It strongly supports this core idea. These locomotor transitions are often destabilizing barrier-crossing events on that underlying energy landscape.
Unstable because you're leaving a stable valley.
Exactly. The system naturally wants to settle into those low-energy basins. To change mode, it has to get perturbed, gain enough energy maybe from its own movement, maybe from the interaction, to get over a barrier and fall into a different basin.
And this led them to propose this idea of a potential energy landscape dominated regime of locomotion.
Yeah, it's a way of thinking about when this landscape perspective is most relevant.
So when is it most relevant? When should we be thinking in terms of these energy hills and valleys?
It's particularly useful when the potential energy barriers, those hills, are significant compared to the kinetic energy the animal or robot has, or the energy it's actively putting in.
Okay.
Like trying to climb over a really large obstacle relative to your size, or trying to flip yourself over when you're stuck on your back. The energy needed to change your state is substantial.
And when is it less relevant?
It's probably less critical for things like, say, ballistic jumping over a small object where momentum is the dominant factor, or maybe moving on a very smooth monatomic slope where there aren't really distinct basins and barriers, or if the obstacles are incredibly tiny or absurdly large compared to the system.
Right. It's for that messy middle ground of complex interaction.
That's where it seems most powerful, yes.
The paper also discusses how the animal or robot's own propulsion and active adjustments fit into this picture. It's not just about passively rolling down hills, is it?
No, absolutely not. The basic forward movement itself, what they call feed-forward self-propulsion, plays a role. Just moving generates kinetic energy fluctuations, little pushes and wobbles.
Right, inherent variations.
And those fluctuations can be enough sometimes to randomly kick the system over a barrier. And naturally, during a transition, the system tends to follow paths of least resistance, moving towards lower potential energy basins along the lowest available barriers.
Okay, but what if that's not enough? What if just moving forward won't get you over the obstacle?
That's where feedback control comes in. Animals and sophisticated robots can actively adjust their body posture, move their appendages, legs, wings, antenna. These are feedback-controlled active adjustments.
Using sensors to guide actions.
Exactly. They use these adjustments to facilitate transitions, especially when the passive dynamics or simple forward movement aren't sufficient to get them into the desired state or over a barrier.
And they're studying this actively.
Yeah, they mention building robots with force sensors specifically to investigate how these active feedback-driven strategies work to navigate the energy landscape more effectively.
It sounds like there's a whole kind of toolbox of strategies that can be used, drawing on this landscape idea.
That's a good way to put it. Because these transitions fundamentally involve overcoming energy barriers, you can influence them in several ways.
How?
Well, you can try to steer the system state towards a desired transition pathway, like aiming carefully, approaching a bump head on to favor the climb basin.
Okay, control your initial conditions.
Or you can actively change the landscape barriers themselves, like the cockroach opening its wings to lower the barrier for rolling upright.
Modify the landscape.
Or you could even modify the overall topology of the landscape, perhaps by changing your body shape or posture dynamically, like using that elliptical body shape for pillars to favor the turn basin.
Right. The paper gave specific examples for each obstacle type using these ideas.
Yes. Things like head flexion and leg adjustments for beams, that wing-leg coordination for self-righting. And crucially, they showed that implementing these strategies in their robots substantially improved performance. They got over obstacles much more reliably.
That's the proof of concept, really.
Exactly.
One of the ideas I found really thought-provoking was this suggestion that the stereotypical ways animals move might actually emerge from the constraints imposed by the physics of interacting with these rugged potential energy landscapes.
Yes, that's a potentially profound insight. The idea is that because the landscape itself, created by the physics of interaction, has these distinct basins and barriers,
the valleys and hills,
the system naturally gets channeled into certain predictable modes of movement. It's easier to be in a valley than on a hillside.
So the consistency we see in animal behavior might not just be programmed neural circuits, but partly a result of the physical world pushing back.
Exactly. It suggests that behavioral stereotypy could have a deep physical basis rooted in the interaction dynamics. And the fact that these principles seem pretty general, holding up across different parameters and scales in their model systems, adds weight to that idea.
Okay, so they figured out these general rules from these abstracted, simplified situations. What's the next big step? How do you go from understanding crossing one gap or climbing one bump
to navigating a truly complex natural environment with sequences of different challenges?
Yeah.
Well, the hypothesis, the vision, is that you can understand these more complex multi-pathway transitions by essentially composing larger scale potential energy landscapes, putting together the simpler landscapes of the individual abstracted challenges.
Like building a bigger map from smaller map sections.
Kind of, yeah. And their ongoing work with that terrain treadmill setup is designed specifically to test this idea. Can we predict sequences of transitions by combining these simpler landscape models?
And if this pans out, it seems like it could have major implications for several different fields.
Oh, absolutely. The paper outlines potential advancements across physics, dynamical systems, biology, and robotics.
Let's touch on those. How might this change how we think about, say, physics?
Well, in physics, it's just fascinating that we're seeing principles governing macroscopic movement transitions that look so analogous to things happening at the microscopic scale, like protein folding. Despite the huge differences in scale, forces, the presence of propulsion,
it hints at some underlying universality.
Perhaps. The vision is to develop potential energy landscape theories specifically for these macroscopic systems, systems that have some form of intelligence, whether it's a nervous system or a robot controller, that actively influences the physical interaction.
So incorporating the control aspect into the physics model.
Exactly. Modeling not just the conservative forces of the landscape, but also the non-conservative forces like propulsion, dissipation, and crucially, that closed-loop feedback control. This could really broaden the scope of the physics of living systems and statistical physics.
Interesting. And for dynamical systems theory, the math of how things change.
Traditionally, locomotion in dynamical systems is often viewed in terms of stable limit cycles. Think the repeating pattern of legs in walking or running.
Right, steady oscillations.
But this potential energy landscape view offers a different perspective, especially for movement in irregular terrain where you're constantly getting knocked off those perfect cycles. It suggests we need theories that explicitly incorporate transitions between these different basin attractors, maybe even through metastable states, those shaky intermediate points.
So moving beyond just stable cycles to include the messy transitions between stable states.
Exactly. And future models could integrate this landscape view with models of proprioception, how the body senses itself, other sensory cues, internal states like hunger or fear, giving a much richer picture of behavior in complex settings.
What about the impact on biology itself?
For biology, this offers a path towards a real first principles physical understanding of how locomotor behavior is organized. You know, studying animal movement in the wild often involves tracking paths because measuring the detailed physical interactions is just so hard.
Right. GPS tags don't tell you how hard the foot hit the rock.
Yeah, precisely. This research really emphasizes how crucial those direct physical interactions are in shaping behavior. By looking at the hierarchy of modes within these combined landscapes, we might understand how physical constraints influence larger scale ecological processes.
Like predator prey chases or migration routes.
Potentially, yeah. How does the physical difficulty of the terrain affect those interactions? It might even offer a way to think about fitness landscapes and selective pressures in a more physically grounded way.
That's a powerful link. And finally, robotics. This seems like the most direct application.
Huge potential, yes. The dream is to develop predictive theories based on these potential energy landscapes that can actively guide robots.
How would that work?
Imagine a robot encountering complex terrain. It could perhaps abstract the task into a sequence of known challenges, gap, bump, beam, then calculate the relevant energy landscape for each challenge based on its own properties and sensor readings of the environment. Then it could identify the possible transition pathways on that landscape, predict the probabilities of success for different strategies, like should I try to climb or turn, and then plan its actions accordingly using physical interaction intelligently.
So using physics to inform planning rather than just trial and error learning?
Exactly. Current AI learning approaches can be brittle, especially in novel or highly unpredictable situations. A physics-based understanding like this could make them much more robust and adaptable. The ultimate vision. Maybe robots could create and share environmental physics maps.
Like physical hazard maps.
Sort of, yeah. Maps that tell other robots not just where things are, but the likely physical interactions and energy landscapes involved in navigating that area. This could open up environments previously impossible for robots.
Okay, so wrapping up this deep dive, it really feels like the core message is the absolute centrality of physical interaction.
Yeah, you can't understand how animals or robots move through complex terrain or how they switch modes without deeply considering that physical interplay with the environment.
And this potential energy landscape framework, despite its complexity, seems to offer a really powerful lens for uncovering the underlying rules governing those transitions.
Exactly. It helps show how seemingly complex, even unpredictable movements can often be understood as these transitions across energy landscapes. Mm-hmm. And those transitions are shaped by everything, the body's shape, its speed, the strategy it uses, and the specific features of the ground beneath it.
The implications really are quite broad, aren't they? Better robots, obviously, more agile, more robust ones for real-world jobs.
Mm-hmm. But also potentially a much deeper understanding of animal behavior, biomechanics, and even the evolutionary forces that have shaped movement over millennia.
Which leaves us with a really interesting thought, maybe for our listeners to ponder.
Go for it.
How might understanding these really fundamental principles of movement, these landscape transitions, inspire completely new designs?
Yeah.
Not just for robots navigating forests or rubble.
Yeah.
But maybe for things like human assistive devices, prosthetics, or even technologies for exploring truly extreme environments here or elsewhere.
That's a great question. Where else could these physics-based insights into movement take us?
Some fascinating possibilities. If you do want to dig deeper into this, we definitely recommend checking out the original research. As we mentioned, the data and code are often available too. We'll pop a link in the show notes.
Absolutely worth a look.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.